Ooh, that's funky. Hey, that's super clean.
You want to run it? I don't know why it was queued up for 2 minutes. I'll give it up.
Yeah, that sounds so good. Hey, we got to run it like this, though, because honestly, I can't take it out. So we just got to play it like this. Episode 29 of the Educated Guest Podcast. Myself and Rodrigo welcome you back. Yo, it's been a minute, right?
A little bit. It's good to be back in the saddle.
We can call this season 2.5. We took some time off for the spring.
2.5. We had a mini series in there.
Yo, we're almost at 30 episodes, so you kind of got to cut us some slack. Anywho's. We're going to tell you a tale today. We're going to tell you a story about a local boy done good. We're also going to talk a little bit about defending your doctoral thesis. You know, just real charged up shit.
Mm-hmm. I think we're going to get in the weeds a little bit. Huh? We're going to get deep into the weeds.
We are. Okay, we are. Cool. And today's story is a little bit of a continuation. Actually, a lot of bit of a continuation from episode 17. If you haven't listened to Educator Maggie, you need to go back and do that. Educator Maggie happens to be today's guest mother.
It's a small world.
And if you are new to the podcast, just to give you a little bit of context, we are here in Chula Vista, California, nestled up against the border, and we teach in a district called Sweetwater. And today's guest is an alum of Sweetwater and a few other schools, and we got a lot to talk about. Welcome to the show, Dr. Daniel Garcia.
What was it like, Dr. Daniel Garcia, to get that doctor been there?
It's weird. It's really weird. You know, like, I've been a student my whole life, and all of a sudden now I'm a doctor. You know, it's first of all, it's an honor to be here on the podcast. You know,
you finally made it.
Really special.
We let him on the list.
You know, you guys got some esteemed guests on here.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, it feels good to, you know, be considered part of that.
The pleasure's all ours. I'm actually really excited to hear the story, Dr. Garcia, because I know Caesar shared with me a little bit, but I'm anxious to get into the weeds and hear what your journey was like.
Definitely.
So,
first off, talk to us about where you went to school here, locally, Sweetwater. Where'd you go?
Bonita Vista High School, class of 2006. Go mm-hmm. Barons.
Mm-hmm. So look, there are some situations where people have succeeded in spite of where they went to school. I think you succeeded, you know, just you had good educators. I think that you were interested in school. I think that some of your teachers helped you with that. So at BV or elsewhere, like, who inspired you to continue on? Who inspired you to get into science, for all things?
Science, that's a different story. Okay. I could start off with an educator that it just inspired me to succeed, and that would be probably Mr. Eric Helly over at Bonita Vista High School. He's the APIB English teacher, so not a science teacher, but I mean, he pushed us to focus on those analytical and critical thinking skills in that class when reading literature, and I think that's really translatable to a lot of other things in life. Those critical analytic thinking skills. Like he challenged us. Like, one thing he would say is, "I don't want you to read this book. I want you to read this book," meaning like, look between the lines, try to understand the author's intent, and what they're trying to say. And so I think that helped me, a lot with a lot of the skills in life.
What's his name again? Helly?
Helly. Yeah.
Okay. Is he still there? Do you know?
He's still there.
Oh, yeah. Shit.
Shout out.
Shout out to Mr.
At Bonita Vista High School. One of the, if you're not familiar with the podcast or our area, one of the more storied high schools in our district as far as academics go. There's Bonita Vista, and there's a few others. East Lake is also one of them.
Yeah.
Rodrigo's.
Mostly the East Side schools for no apparent reason other than affluence. But... You know, I think it's there's something to be said about, you know, someone who's made an impact on someone. It doesn't necessarily mean, you know, what school they went to. We've heard that story from a couple different demographics. And so shout out to Mr. Helly. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's cool.
Sure. So is this AP Lit?
Yeah. Yeah. APIB English Literature.
Wow.
I mean, not just like, you know, the literature. He also taught us how to write. So we would do free writing in journals.
Oh, you sound so much better when you get closer to the mic. Journal. He's got a good podcast voice. Like, really good, right?
Thank you. What was I saying?
Continue.
Go ahead. No, you.
Oh, writing. Yeah. So, he would have us free write at the beginning in class in journals, and like that exercise of getting your thoughts down on paper, you know, in whatever form is really liberating. And he helped us, you know, hone those skills. That exercise, you know, helped me craft my college applications and things like that. So, yeah, reading and writing, I think, is kind of like the basis of everything that, you know, goes on from there.
Okay. And, you were also involved with a few other things at Bonita Vista High School. I know you were a runner. You were big into running. Your whole family is into running.
Cross country and running track. The only sports that would accept me.
I love it. Turns out, joke's on them. We got a PhD out of it, motherfucker.
Yeah, no, cross country was great. I mean, people think of it as an individual sport, but it's really a team sport. You know, you depend on your teammates to get that score down. It's kind of like golf, the lowest score wins. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, cross country in itself is kind of like you learn how to, you know, push yourself through hard times, push yourself through adversity. And, you know, a lot of cross country athletes are also, you know, high achieving in the classroom. And I don't think there's any coincidence there.
Yeah, my experience 13 years teaching high school, I would say cross country athletes do very well in the classroom.
Yeah, they do. And one of a future guest of the podcast, Mr. Michael Strong of High Tech High, is also the cross country and track coach over at High Tech High. But very, very, very storied tradition of the distance runners and academic achievement.
I've never had a cross country student come to me and beg me.
It's master credit, Mr. Fernandez.
Yo, I need 4% more. If not, I'm ineligible for cross country. This is something that's never been said to me in my 13 years of teaching high school.
I might not be eligible for cross country. It's never been uttered. So,
were you a band geek too, or was that one of your siblings?
No, I wasn't. I wasn't in the band. No.
Okay. So just also for more context, you have a brother and a sister who also went to Bonita Vista.
Yeah.
And have done pretty well in school also. Mm-hmm. You guys are kind of like the Mexican Cosbys of Bonita.
I ain't going to hell, man.
Okay, that's a good, I guess that's a good analogy, yeah.
Hey, it's much props to your moms and your pops. I've always felt that way. It's like if you have more than two kids, chances are one of them's going to be a fuck up.
The law of averages says.
Right? Right?
Someone's going to fuck it up.
But not in your family. So all props to your moms and your pops before we continue on with this podcast.
We appreciate it, yeah.
Yeah, no doubt. So from there, from Bonita Vista, you go to a college that I thought really didn't exist until you actually went there. I remember being in San Diego State in my rhetoric and writing class, learning how to write business letters, and it was literally to Harvey Mudd University, and I'm just like, ha ha ha, like, well, why would a university ever be named Harvey Mudd? Like, that. Turns out it's a pretty good university.
Fucking idiot. I love it.
No, it's true. I tell people I go there, and they're like, oh, Harvard Med? Oh, you got your bachelor's from Harvard Med? And that doesn't make any sense, because that's a medical school. But,
correct.
But, yeah, Harvey Mudd. M-U-D-D. Yeah.
So I'm sure you got accepted to more schools than just that one. So
I actually only applied to UCs and Harvey Mudd College. So I ended up going there because they offered me the best financial aid package. Mm. And I didn't really get that much financial aid from any of the UCs or state schools that I applied to. So it ended up being a good fit.
Okay.
So tell us a little bit more about, like, so that was the decision for sure. What was that? Like, give me your first day at Harvey Mudd, and what's it like? And for the people who don't know, maybe might be listening, what the fuck, where is it?
Yeah, it's in Claremont, California, not Claremont Mesa down here, Claremont in the Los Angeles area, east, if you know the Pomona area, just east of there. It's a small college. There's probably only 1,000 students there. But it's part of a consortium of colleges called the Claremont Colleges. Mm-hmm. Goes along with Scripps College, the Women's College, Pitzer College, Pomona College, and Claremont McKenna College. And so they all form like a bigger campus.
Gotcha.
That's more like 5,000, 6,000 students.
Gotcha.
So within Harvey Mudd, yeah, it's a small community. Everyone knows everybody. But within the larger college community, it's more like a bigger college campus.
Right on. Okay.
So how'd you feel there? I mean, when you went there, like, you stepped on campus, what?
Yeah. I mean, everyone there is like valedictorian. So I kind of felt, you know, I wasn't valedictorian myself, so I kind of caught a little knockdown there. But everyone there is smart. Everyone's, you know, really successful. Everyone's really driven. So it was kind of hard for me to succeed at first because, you know, the classes are hard. My peers are all, you know, really smart. And I felt, you know.
All right. You know what?
Well, I think
I need you to take a sip of that beer and mellow out. I don't know if the notes are helping this young man or not.
The screen's black. I just, I get a little nervous.
I love it. Well, see, the thing is, we've been talking about this in the last couple episodes, or maybe not even on the episodes, but the imposter syndrome is real.
No, yeah. Thank you for bringing that up because I mean, I still experience that to this day, you know, even through, after going through undergraduate and graduate school. It's still like, you know, it's a shadow that follows me everywhere, mm-hmm. I feel like. And, yeah, when I first got there, you know, I didn't really feel at home. Like, there wasn't that many Latinos on campus. I had to go out and find more people that, you know, had similar experiences than me. I had to go outside of the campus to find that there's not that much diversity there. Right. But I think it has been, increasing over time. Like they've had more women applicants to the college, more diversity. So it's definitely improved over time. But when I was there, I feel like it was a little lacking, and that community sense kind of was lacking in my first couple years there.
Yeah. I think we all kind of identify with that same kind of higher education anxiety of showing up to a campus and then going, damn, there's a lot of white people here. Mm-hmm. And just kind of going, wait a minute. And I remember D giving my parents the same kind of talk, like, so Rodrigo's gonna come back to school or come back home and he's gonna be a little angry, just watch out, you know, just not used to being able to, you know, see all these people, and it's just a different environment. Yeah. I'm sure.
And yeah, and there wasn't enough Latinos on campus to create that community, so, you know, we had to go, you know, to the Chicano Latino Student Association, which encompassed all five campuses.
That makes sense.
And then with that, you know, we were able to, you know, have that carne asada, get together, establish that community, establish those relationships, people who had similar experiences as you, who are in the same spot as you, you get through those early, you know, tough times in college.
The marinated steak, carne asada, yeah. Motherfuckers, guys, come on. Call carne asada, guys. We'll call it marinated steak, friend. No.
Translate, thank you.
So was it tough to get through that college, or?
It was hard. I mean, the curriculum is difficult. And I think a lot of people wear that as a badge of honor. You know, like, I had to take, you know, physics and chemistry classes that not that many other biology students at other universities had to do. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was challenging there, but I wouldn't regret any of it. Like, I had a lot of great experiences in the biology department. That's my experiences there helped me get into biology and fall in love with biology.
Okay, so let's go there now. What's your story with science? Because for me, math was just easy. And for me, I took chemistry in the ninth grade. Eighth grade. I got it out of the way, and I loved it. The teacher was great. I took chemistry in the junior college, and I dropped it because that shit was fucking hard. Why? Why science?
Yes. Yeah, that's. I have like a personal answer to that question. Like, so when I was a kid, I was diagnosed with the juvenile rheumatoid arthritis (JRA), and like that disease. I mean, I'm fine now, but the reason why I'm fine now is because of the amazing medication that I was able to take.
Okay.
that made me better. Wow. Mm-hmm. And when I went to college and I was taking, you know, all my science classes, realizing like, oh, a scientist designed this in their lab, and, you know, they use their scientific knowledge, the scientific method,
right,
to figure something out to help someone. And when I realized that I was taking that medication that someone had designed in the lab, or someone had done scientific research to discover, I realized, man, science can definitely benefit people. Science has definitely helped me in that sense. Mm-hmm. And that kind of inspired me to pursue scientific research in that sense. So I think that was, you know, a really formative experience, like realizing,
hell yeah,
wow, that science is directly benefiting my life. It has helped me be able to run cross country in that manner, be able to play soccer or, you know, any other thing where most people who have arthritis, not most people, but a lot of people end up becoming disabled later on in life, you know, being confined to a wheelchair or, you know, being physically disabled in some sort of way. The number one cause of disability in the United States is arthritis.
Mm.
So I feel like I dodged a bullet by, you know, this getting exposed to this medication that really helped me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that really inspired me to pursue science as a career.
When did you know? Was there a singular point where you're like, fuck, science is it. I need to do this. And I'm now you're addicted and you're buying all the lizard comic books and shit. You know,
what?
That was me. You know what I'm saying? Like, oh, fuck, this is awesome. I get it. And then now it's like I'm into it.
Yeah, I was in a biochemistry class in college, and we were talking about proteins. And I went back and found like the scientific paper that was published describing the medication that I take.
Oh, right on.
And I read it, and I was able to understand it based on, you know, what we learned in class. And when I read that, I was like, wow, this is a medication. A scientist discovered this, published it, and I'm able to, with my education, I'm able to read it and understand it. This is super empowering to me. This is, yeah.
I can do the same thing.
And I can do the same thing for other people.
That's awesome.
That's awesome. A fucking good story.
Well, the sense of purpose, man, is so, so powerful. People don't understand that. And I think, you know, when people get older, it's not because, you know, they don't, people's longevity in life and the quality of life is not driven by anything else other than purpose. So if people don't have a purpose, it's very difficult for them.
What motivates you?
Yeah, and so it's clear that something is driving you to do that, to complete your PhD, to do the research, and it's obvious that, you know, the experiences that happened in your past shape the lens in which you see the future. And that's dope.
I think I remember being a teenager when I heard that Daniel had arthritis, and he was just a kid, and then I hear that he's like playing sports and doing cross country, and I'm like, wait, like, how's he doing this stuff? So the medicine like just really works for that, right?
I mean, but it's also, you know, credit to my parents who like went out and made me be active,
right? Because they could have done something completely. Like, you can't do anything. Don't do anything.
Right. Just stay at home. Like, you don't want to move. You don't want to be in pain. No. But they made me move out of my comfort zone, join the swim team, go out there and run around, even when I didn't want to. And I think that, you know, helped me also, like, not just the medication, but just the being active part helped me overcome that.
Wow. Wow.
That's dope.
That's a dope story.
So that's a dope story. So just for those of you who are listening at home, you can't see the character. I'm going to try to describe Daniel as he sits in front of us, right? A young 29-year-old baby-faced Latino male, right? Uh-huh. Rocking the Dilla shirt. Right,
right,
and some suede Pumas. You know what I'm saying? My man's
some old school suede.
My man's
Pumas.
Figured it out. Uh-huh, you know what I'm saying? Uh-huh. 29-year-old PhD. He figured it out. You know what I'm saying?
He got the hipster flannel on. He lives in North Park. Look it up.
Okay.
Look it up. Okay. He lives in North Park.
Nice.
So that's the full picture.
Yeah. I've come to terms with being a hipster. You know, I'm here drinking craft beer. You know, I make my own pour over at home. Coffee. That's coffee. Grind it myself, you know.
Oh. So I think it's a good time.
All those stories just kind of started swirling around. I'm just gonna fuck with you.
I think it's a good time to talk about the unofficial sponsors of the Educated Guest podcast today.
Go ahead.
So we have Insurgente Cerveza. We're drinking the brown ale, and we have the Modern Times beer. We're drinking the Haunted Stars and
Tres Generaciones Añejo. That's just for me and Caesar, since Danielito is not gonna partake yet.
Okay. Yeah. So between you going to you going to Harvey Mudd and then getting your doctorate, that's all kind of fuzzy for me. What did you do in between then?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I knew I wanted to go into research, right? I wanted to contribute to the scientific field. I wanted to discover something cool or interesting that might be able to help people. So I didn't really have that much research experience in my undergrad at Harvey Mudd. So I went, I actually got a job out at the National Institutes of Health, the NIH, which is a government research agency out in DC. And when I was out there, I worked in a lab and I did research to get that experience to figure out if I really, this is something I really wanted to do. And through that experience, I was able to realize I really like research. I really like, you know, the day in, day out of doing experiments, planning experiments, discovering new things that no one's ever discovered, potentially. And with that, I realized if I want to do this in my career long term, I need to get a PhD. I need to get this degree that will, you know, firmly cement me as a official scientist. And, you know, also comes with that extra pay grade. So
word.
That's why I decided to apply to graduate school. And
So I'm here now. So basically you're out in DC, you're getting experience in the lab is what you're doing, right?
Exactly.
Okay. So, yeah. So look, talk to me about the joy of science. So give me an idea, like, boom, you're in the lab and you're like, fuck, I got an idea for a new experiment. Like, how does that happen?
There has to be something in there where you're just like, you kind of step back and get very aroused, hashtag very aroused. And you're just like, wait a minute, this is fucking awesome. Yeah.
And scientific excitement is really what all scientists live for. Like, I mean, I can tell you how that feels in terms of like my own research in my graduate work. I can tell you kind of like that story.
Yeah.
And how I enjoy discovering new things in terms of cancer.
Okay.
So, let's see, how can I start this? So basically, I study, cancer, breast cancer specifically.
Okay.
Cancer metastasis, or the process of how cancer cells spread to other parts of the body.
Right.
And, you know, we're trying to figure out how to stop cancer from spreading. Because most people that die from cancer die from it spreading to their brain, their liver, their lungs, other vital organs. If we can stop that process from happening, we can save a lot of people's lives. And the idea behind that is that cancer is a largely curable disease. Like, if you get cancer today, you have a 90% chance of living the next 5 to 10 years.
Okay.
Let me hit you with that stat. So the survival rate is relatively good for certain types of cancers, for most cancers.
Okay.
The issue comes when that cancer spreads, and that's the lethal thing.
Right.
So we're trying to stop that from happening. We're trying to understand what is occurring inside a cancer cell that allows it to spread. And if we can understand the genetics behind that, we can start to design drugs to target those genes to stop that cancer from spreading. And save people's lives.
So you're at the research piece,
yes.
Right? And so you went from UCSD, right? Or from Harvey Mudd to DC, DC to
UCSD.
UCSD. Yeah. And so how long would you stay at UCSD?
I was there for 6 years. Well, I'm still kind of there, just wrapping things up. But right, that's a six years to get the PhD. And nice. I think that's about average.
Okay.
About average for PhDs, I think, in most fields. Yeah.
That's very cool, man. And so what was the experience like then? Obviously you enjoyed it in your grad, but is there a sense of relief? Is there a sense of, talk to us about that.
Yeah. It's a huge relief. Right now I'm waiting on a paper to get published. So I just submitted my thesis research to a journal, and we're waiting to hear back to see if it gets published. And that,
which journal?
Molecular Cancer Research.
Nice. Okay.
And just the fact that I've done, you know, work in the lab, experiments showing a certain thing, and the fact that it gets published out in the world for everyone to see, that's a huge accomplishment in my mind. And I never thought that I'd get to that point. In my mind, that's a huge accomplishment, be able to contribute to the scientific field in a way. Like, I discovered something that no one had previously known. And right. there were suspicions, you know, there was ideas out there that this might be true, but I was able to show it experimentally using the scientific method, and that, that's just really special in my mind. Yeah.
I think it's dope, dude. One thing that I would like to pick your brain about and just kind of, you know, get into the weeds a little bit about was, so you're writing this document. Right. What was your process of writing the document? Who's reviewing it?
I want to take two breaks on the podcast real quick. Educated Guest Podcast, episode 29. I want you to play some music real quick. I just want to take one. I want to take two breaks, but I want to take one right now. And then we're going to we're going to get into your doctoral thesis.
Yeah.
And then after that, we're going to get into the music of it. You know what I'm saying? We're going to get you.
Yeah.
All right.
I've never played this.
The instrument where you played that.
I don't have this.
During our Jay Gilla day, you played this, bro.
I think I played a mix that might have had it, but I've never. I don't have this song.
All right,
that's tight though. Okay, so yeah, this one. What else? Because I'll add this to your little playlist.
I love it. All right. Back. Welcome back. Episode 29 of the Educated Guest Podcast. We got Dr. Daniel Garcia, scientist at large, right?
Friendly neighborhood scientist.
Local boy done good, right? We
your neighborhood family doctor. No, the happy scientist is a good way to say it.
I like that. So let's talk about your defense of your doctoral thesis. Let's talk about how that went. Like, okay, so you knew you had this idea you wanted to go with, and how long did it take you to work on that?
Well, let's rewind a little bit. So, like, when I first started grad school, I joined a program that lets you rotate in different specialties to figure out what you want to do.
Okay.
So I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I knew I wanted to do research. I knew I wanted to do research on human diseases, but I didn't know exactly which one. So I tried different things. I ended up joining a lab that where there was a project available for me to work on that studied cancer metastasis. So that's what I ended up focusing on. And in order to get rolling, you got to write a proposal. So we wrote a proposal, and in that proposal, you have to do your due diligence, right? So you got to read everything on what people have done up until this point in that field. So you have an understanding of what are the unanswered questions, what are the gaps in knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And based on that information, that was basically like a big literature review that I had to do.
Right.
And based on that information, I formulated a hypothesis and two or three specific aims that I wanted to tackle during my time in grad school. And over the past 5 years, I've been able to, you know, go and tackle those things, do experiments to address those questions. And, you know, over the years, I would present my progress to a committee of faculty. So this is five different faculty that I choose who basically oversee and guide me through this entire process. So I'm not doing this alone. I have people who are my mentors. They're helping me decide, you know, what are the right experiments to do? Are my experiments too lofty, too difficult? You know, they bring me down from my crazy scientific, like, you know, I'll go and propose all this crazy stuff, and then they'll be like, "No, you can't do that." I mean, that'll require 10 years of work, not 4 years of work. So, that's why that committee is really necessary to bring you in and help you focus on what you need to do.
So with that committee, did you feel like those people on your committee were there to kind of support you, or did you ever feel like? Because I know that this happens in academia too. Is like the older guard does not want to yield the information to the younger guard, and then they just make it difficult, and they just become a pain in the ass and more of a thorn than a support.
I made the point of picking people who I liked and I had a good rapport with.
Perfect.
And who I knew would support me through this entire thing and who wouldn't try to prevent me from achieving my goals. So the committee that I chose, I had worked with them previously. I had met them in previous, you know, conferences or functions. I had built a personal relationship with them, and I was really happy with the committee that I chose because they were, you know, really nice to me, really supportive throughout this entire thing, and really gave me the best advice. And I think with their help, I was able to finish in an adequate amount of time, or else, you know, I would have been there for, you know, a few more years or longer.
It'd been like D, not getting your PhD and just hanging out there for another good decade.
Slight. Some people, you know, they choose a committee member who's kind of like you described, kind of like a gatekeeper, and, you know, kind of preventing them from or like asking them more of what might be needed or necessary to get a PhD.
Right. And I wonder if that's just like an ego thing. If like you're just trying to kiss the ring and shit like that. Like, I wouldn't want to do that. Cause I've been having these conversations with colleagues too. It's like, hey, how come you're not doing your PhD? How come you're not doing this? Blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, nah. For me, it's a completely different subject, but I mean, those are things that come up. Like, is your panel going to support you, or are they just going to get in the way and fuck with you?
Yeah, they fully supported me. And going back to the defense of my dissertation, where I had to do a presentation, you know, in front of them and open to the public so anybody could come.
Okay.
That was basically a formality because leading up to that point, you know, I had been meeting with him yearly.
It's already been vetted.
Yeah. Damn. I've been meeting them with him year after year, you know, updating them with on my progress, letting them know what I've been up to, mm-hmm. My results, and they've been questioning me and challenging me to answer their questions over the past, you know, 5 years. So by the time I had a meeting back in September prior to my defense, and that was basically that known as the pre-defense meeting, and they basically okayed me to go ahead and schedule my last dissertation.
Because in the dissertation, it's not even like they wouldn't schedule you for the dissertation if they didn't feel you were ready.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. They wouldn't okay it.
So word is though is that you were really nervous still, and you didn't eat for like 3-4 days. No, why were you true. So nervous if everything was ready to go? You know what I'm saying?
Imposter syndrome, man. Like it's always there, regardless of anything. It's irrational, really. Like it's hard to shake.
Okay.
And that anxiety just got the hold of me and I couldn't shake it. And, you know, even though I had it in the bag, essentially, like my committee members, you know, they supported me, on me moving forward. Mm-hmm. I was still like really nervous and stressed out going into it. And,
you know, it's funny. It's like what's helped me with that. Cause we've all struggled with that, but I do remember hearing a quote that was like, that fucking makes sense, right? We suffer more in the mind than we do in actuality, or we suffer more in the mind than we do in reality.
Yeah.
And it plays out all day, every day, mm-hmm. right? And we start worrying about like, well, what's going to happen? This is going to happen. They're going to yell at me. They're going to ask me a question that I'm not going to know.
Exactly.
And then you realize that, oh my God, you know what? Yeah. Then after you start to say those mantras, the we suffer more in our mind than we do in reality, then you're like, I do know my shit. Mm-hmm. I am prepared. I wouldn't be here if I wasn't. I am good enough to be here. And now that like self-talk fucking helps a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And even looking back on all the big presentations that I've had to do, I was always like crazy stressed out right up until that point. And then looking back, I'm realizing, wow, that wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be.
Absolutely. Never has been, never will be. Mm-hmm. Right. That's fucking awesome. Yeah. So rewind a little bit back to the proposal piece. This is interesting to me. And mm-hmm. I'm sorry if we get into the weeds here, Caesar. Now, when you submit your proposal, do you know if they're looking for like original research? Are they looking for creativity? Are they looking for orthogonal thinking? Are they thinking, obviously every institution is different.
Yeah.
But it would be helpful for listeners to kind of go, okay, I'm thinking about getting my PhD. I want to go to this area, this region. And how do we formulate a proposal?
Yeah, that's a great question. Because you want to propose something that's doable within the time frame that you should finish a PhD. Gotcha. So five or six years. So you don't want to propose anything too lofty, or you don't want to propose anything too basic, because then you'll be done, and then your committee will be like, "Well, this isn't enough for a PhD." So, and it really depends on your committee, because your committee has a perspective of what is creative and what is not. What is lofty and what is not. So you really have to choose your committee based on what your personal goals are.
Yeah, right.
So you got to go out there and talk to professors. You got to go out there and talk about research, see what they're interested in, because you have to craft that committee, because you want to bring in their expertise,
right?
Because they're going to help you make those hard decisions that you have to make in the course of that project.
Right. So now I'm going to start talking shit real quick.
Oh,
so
really?
Just a little bit.
Okay.
Because I hold you guys in such high esteem. The doctors. The individual, not necessarily the doctors. And that's why I'm going to start talking shit. And I want to see if there's, for you, is there a difference? Because in the educational world, we have this EDD, right? This doctor of education. And it's like 3 years or whatever, blah, blah, blah.
You're already talking shit.
And this, it's easy for me to send someone who's, sitting on the sidelines to talk shit, right? But you, someone who's been in there, in the trenches, is there a difference? Do you know of a difference? Or is it, should I back up off my cup and sit my, back up off my shit and sit my cup down? Tell me what's going on.
Well, I think it all comes down to original research, because I think that's what a PhD is all about. Discovering something new that no one's ever discovered, contributing to a field in a significant way, and not just doing experiments. I mean, your work has to be peer reviewed, So yeah. You have to be under the, you know, it has to go through multiple levels of consideration. Your committee is looking at it, criticizing you over certain things, little things, the details. So, I mean, if you were able to do some original research and discover something that no one's, you know, ever thought of before and contribute to a field in a significant way, yeah, then I respect you for that.
Right,
and
right,
that's,
right.
That's kind of like the badge of honor.
Yeah. See, and the way he said that was fucking great. But what I see,
okay,
what I see is typically just people, the difference between an EDD and a PhD, there's a difference between reading someone else's work and then generating your own work. Right, reading someone else's work and regurgitating that, not just in a lit review, because both courses are going to need to do a lit review, and that's fine, right. Whatever you got to do, that's whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
But when you're just reciting someone else's work and saying these are best practices versus someone generating their own theory and then contributing to the field, that's mm-hmm. way bigger to me, and that's why I think like that's what warrants the shit talking. You know what I'm saying?
Rodrigo is giving you the reasons why he's backing off of getting his doctorate, okay?
Not really. I mean,
God, come on, man. Wait,
let me say that there's something to be said about, you know, reading other people's work, because, I mean, there's PhDs do meta-analysis, right, which is looking at the research that's out there, bringing it all in,
right,
and making sense of everything. And that's what a meta-analysis is. And that's original research in itself, because you're synthesizing new ideas based on whatever else is out there. So there's something to be said for that. Like, that's definitely, you know, a contribution to the field that no one's ever done. But making a new discovery, yeah, I think that's another step forward that moves the field forward.
True indeed.
And generates more questions.
Right.
With the ideas that you bring to the table.
Ooh, that really moves it forward,
ooh,
right?
I love it. I love it. Generates more questions.
Hashtag tell me more.
Ooh, very
hashtag aroused. Very aroused.
I mean, in especially in the science field, like, there's always another question.
Absolutely.
You know, like, why? Why that?
Well, yeah, and I think that what we don't do in the education community is we don't do enough of that.
So in preparation for your defense, did you do anything? Mm-hmm. Did you go watch other people's defenses? Because I know that shit's public, right? So did you go watch some?
Yeah, so over the years, I had friends who defended before me, so I went to go see theirs to see how they do it. Kind of modeled mine after that. But, I mean, it's open to the public, so, you know, you have to kind of craft it so that anybody could understand it.
Ooh.
Not like the general public, but...
I'm getting aroused right now.
But, basically, I did my presentation in the style that any scientist would know what I'm talking about.
Hmm.
And I did my introduction so that any layperson would know what I'm talking about. And if you just watch the introduction and then you just watch the conclusion, you would have an idea of what I worked on and what I contributed. You don't really need to know the details.
You don't need to know the minutia.
But I gave you I set the stage with the introduction, and then I, you know, finished it up with a conclusion telling you what to take away from it.
So I think the one thing we don't have is, like, what was it? Like, what was your doctoral thesis? Like, what did you tell the public?
Yeah, so I talked about cancer metastasis. You know, we're trying to stop that from occurring in people, because that's what kills people the most when they get cancer, right?
When it spreads.
I guess I can start off with a little bit of background. I don't want you guys to bust out the Z's, you know, the snores.
Hey, we'll give you the verbal eval real quick. We'll give you the verbal eval real quick. Tougher than
your defense, bro. Just be like, nah, B, that shit's boring as fuck.
But you know what? No, there's something to be said about, like, you said, you know, crafting the language so that the layperson can hear is fucking huge. I think even in the lit reviews, we do such a poor job as writers. Like, we're not taught to write that way.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the real skill of taking, like, being a master of something. Obviously, you're a master of, you know, cancer research and stuff like that. Now, how do you take that mastery and synthesize it or distill it, not losing anything, but you just have the most important parts?
Yeah, so go ahead. I want the general public to understand, you know, what I did. I don't want just scientists to understand what I did.
Yeah.
So if we get into cancer, let's get into it. So, so cancer, it usually starts in the cells that line and protect your organs.
Okay.
So your internal organs are usually encapsulated by a protective layer of cells. Those cells typically form tight seals between each other, you know, keeping the bad stuff out and the good stuff in, you know, really protecting those organs. Mm-hmm. And when cancer occurs in those cells, you know, the cells start to grow uncontrollably, and that's what forms the tumor, right? So that tumor is that mass of cells that just wouldn't stop growing. But those cells, they retain, you know, those
protective cells.
Those protective cells retain those tight seals.
Okay.
Right. So you might be asking, so if a tumor is just a mass of cells all stuck together, how can it spread? So that's what we're trying to answer. How does that cancer spread? If it's just like a mass of cells that are all stuck together, these cells are typically, you know, really sticky.
And
as your tumor progresses, some of the cells begin to undergo some changes. So some of the cells begin to lose those tight seals. They begin to infiltrate, you know, the surrounding tissue, and they'll get into so they gain the ability to move. So those cells will get into the circulation. So they'll get into your bloodstream, and that's how they can basically travel to anywhere.
So is it that they move, or is there something else moving them?
They
like,
move.
Is it just like an osmosis thing where there's a pressure thing, and then now they're just transferring to a different place, or do they get up and get their feet and fucking go over somewhere else?
It's both. It's both. That's a good question. So like a cancer cell is going to migrate away from that original tumor.
Right, right.
Because it underwent that change. And then once it's in the bloodstream, then it's kind of just floating.
Yeah, right.
And,
right.
And in that sense, it's kind of like just a random chance of where it might end up.
Yeah, where it's going to land.
And so that change from like really sticky to invasive and migratory, that's what I'm studying. That specific change in the cancer cell that occurs during cancer development.
Mm.
So
wow.
Basically what I did was I tried to understand what are the genetics behind that switch between really sticky mass and that invasive cell. And so what I did was I compared cancers that were really invasive and compared them to cancers that are not very invasive. And when you compare their genetics, you can start to find some differences. And those differences could be responsible for that switch from sticky to invasive, from that mass to invasive. And so we had some candidates, so we found some genes that are different in invasive tumors compared to non-invasive tumors. And what you can do now is you can start to think about experiments. If you have a collection of genes that's different when you compare invasive cancer to non-invasive cancer,
right,
those genes might be responsible. So what you can do is you can take those genes and insert them into cancer cells that are not very invasive and see if it'll change them. So this is experiments that you can do in a dish.
Right.
So see if those genes can change a non-invasive cell to an invasive cell. And if that one gene is responsible for that.
And then once you, if you know that, then you can find a solution for everything else.
Exactly. Like that's the key. Or you can do the opposite, knock it out.
Silence
it in a cancer cell that's invasive and see if it switches back to not invasive to see if that gene is necessary for that.
Mm.
Those are the kind of experiments that I was doing in the lab to see if, you know, certain genes are responsible for that cellular behavior.
Cool. So then postdoc, do you continue that research, or what does postdoc look like for you?
So there's two different flavors of postdoc. So it's a good question. So there's postdocs in academia. So that's, you know, working in a lab. Usually people switch fields or switch questions.
Mm.
And I think the reason for that is, you know, you saw a project all the way through. Now it's time to do something different and show that you can apply those skills that you learned in your graduate training to solving a new problem, and someone else can, you know,
continue that project. I think that's the purpose of the whole lit review, and that's the purpose of publishing, so that people can see the original work and go, okay, this is what Dr. Garcia did. Cool, I can replicate it. This is how I can improve it. This is how I can change it.
Mm-hmm.
Move forward, and that's how the whole field goes forward.
Yeah, and I think in your postdoc, like, it depends on what you want to do. So if you want to be a professor, for example, if you want to run a lab at a university and run a research program at the same time teaching classes, and your postdoc is meant for determining what you want to focus on in your professorship.
Yeah,
and that's what you do in your postdoc.
My man.
So what are you going to do?
So what am I going to do? Great question.
Yeah.
Great question. So the second flavor of postdoc I didn't mention is postdoc in industry. So it's basically the same thing, but you're doing it at a company, at a biotech or pharmaceutical company, and helping move their research program forward. And I think that's what I'm going to move forwards with, doing a postdoc in industry.
Anybody... Dream job, dream thing. Like, let's think big here, folks.
Okay. Yeah.
What is it that, like,
put it out in the universe?
Yeah, exactly. You got a call to action. So what would it be? What are you looking for?
Yeah, I can see myself, you know, working as a scientist for a pharmaceutical or biotech company. There's a lot in San Diego. Celgene, Pfizer, Illumina, all these companies are creating drugs or technology that are helping patients. With diseases, live better lives or cure their disease. So I could see myself working as a scientist in those companies with the idea that I'm going to be working towards, you know, helping discover or develop a drug, helping discover or develop a treatment for certain diseases that'll help people in the long run, just like I experienced in my lifetime.
Right on. That's fucking rad.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna make the soft pitch real quick and say, so would you be open to having any students shadow you? Because I think that would be an awesome experience for them.
I
currently have a student who just got accepted to Harvey Mudd.
No way.
Yes.
Yeah. Tell him to hit me up. Yeah. I love talking to Mudders.
You guys are fucking stupid.
Nerd alert.
Yeah, tell him to hit Mudders. Me up. Give him my email. You know, I love talking to people. I love mentoring people. People have mentored me, so it's only right that I give back. But and I also just, you know, like the process of helping people discover new things, giving them more information, and, you know, helping them discover their path.
Break two, and then we get to the nitty gritty and the funky. Episode 29, Educated Guest Podcast. Keep it funky.
I agree with the breaks because I was listening to some of the earlier podcasts, and I think they could have benefited from one or two breaks in there.
Okay, you know what? That. You're out of here. You're out of here. Piece of shit. Like that, see kisses from bruises don't make it heal back. It beats the sex appeal that's from the next stand. Not necessarily the sex hand. What might appeal to the intellect having a greater effect on how they feel it? Stimulating, breaking down their shields for the real man. As it stands mysteriously, curiosity, it kills the cat then. Offsets them mentally so they're trapped in. Behind these fantasies with no action. Educated Guest Podcast, episode 29. Yo, my man. So I am playing one of your top fives, right? Like this is not a top five. This is a song that you.
I mean, this is.
You got to turn on your mics, friend.
Turn on the mic.
Haven't had that much to drink.
Noob move. Okay. No, this is just what I'm vibing to recently, and what I really. Gotten into within the past, you know, 5 years.
That can you give me your intro to hip hop? Like, why you love hip hop?
Yeah, that's a great.
It wasn't because of me.
I was thinking about this recently. I was actually a DJ in college.
Oh, word the fuck! Oh,
not in the sense that you know, I was, you know, spinning records and scratching and stuff. No, I would just play parties, and I think that's when I first started realizing.
With the Mudders?
With them mother Mudders. With them mother Mudders, son.
Claremont kids. And so I would DJ parties, and that's when I started to expand my musical interest. And at Mud, we had this thing called the Network.
Okay.
Which was, oh man, maybe I shouldn't say this, but.
No, talk about it. Talk about it.
It's just a peer to peer file sharing network.
You're sharing music.
We're sharing music, yeah. And so,
shit, that's illegal.
Yeah, but this is in the Napster days, right? I mean,
This is after Napster and after LimeWire got shut down. So, like, I was on LimeWire a lot.
Damn.
Me too, son.
And
me
then when
too.
I heard that one kid got busted, like, for file sharing, he was like, you know, like $3 million or something like that that he owed to the
disc, music, but he had like multiple discographies of Metallica.
That's the thing
you fucked up with. Don't do LimeWire.
I stopped using LimeWire at that time. I think it was when I was in college, and then found out about the network, and that just exposed me to a bunch of new music.
Okay,
and that's when like my freshman year in college, I started getting into Jay-Z, Mos Def. The guys from the 90s, early 2000s, that hip hop. And I just started listening like crazy. And, you know, just expanded my musical knowledge in that sense. And then that translated to me being a DJ and playing like party jams and stuff like that. And
I fucking love it.
At college parties. So,
because it's so like, okay, so this is something that we've been talking about recently, about this being champions of the sacred and profane. Right, the sacred is like the research that we do, how do we change lives, save babies and things like that, right, but then there's the profane is the and we're gonna get down and gritty with it,
man.
We're
y'all are it. So eloquent, like we're gonna have some fun,
we're gonna fuck shit up right quick,
real quick.
I can never have the words to, you know, describe it in that way. That's like perfect way to describe it. That's an eloquent.
shout out to D, because D had that. My older brother Diego, he was he's very he has the gift of gab for sure.
Yeah, well, at Harvey Mudd, we work hard, we play hard.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
So
I know you're hip hop versed. Give us your top five, your top three albums, artists. I don't care. Just give it to us.
Yeah. So I was trying to do this in terms of like artists and groups, and I was never happy with the list that I came up with for myself, because it's always changing. It's always changing. Like
hip hop.
I couldn't live with myself with, you know, talking about a top three in terms of artists and groups. Producers, though, that's a different story. I'm a beat guy, so
switch it on us.
I can list you my top three favorite producers, beat makers. The top one being James D. Yancey, aka JD, aka J Dilla.
Yeah.
All-time favorite
rest
producer.
RIP.
Rest in peace. Number two would be Ninth Wonder.
Really? Mm.
Very influenced by Dilla, I think.
Yes.
In terms of sampling, in terms of, you know, his music selection. Interestingly, he's an educator. He's known as the hip-hop professor.
Yeah.
He lectures at Duke. He lectures at North Carolina, University of North Carolina. But, you know, he's educating the youth about the history of hip hop. And he has this documentary, shout out to Ninth Wonder, The Hip Hop Fellow. He actually did some original research at Harvard.
Oh, no shit.
He's a hip hop fellow at Harvard under the guidance of Henry Louis Gates, Dr. Gates. They did a documentary on him. That's an awesome documentary. If you love hip hop, you should check that out. The Hip Hop Fellow.
Now, was it Dilla that was in that? I mean, Ninth Wonder that was I want to say OK Player. Who was it that recently just put out a quick little documentary, like a quick 5-minute just little snippet of the NPC?
Mm.
And they just talked about why the NPC was so revolutionary. And they put J. Dilla's NPC in the
African American History Museum in Washington, D.C.
So tell me, a little bit about that, or if you know about it, or should I?
Well, I visited the African American History Museum in Washington, D.C. And
shout out to your moms and pops.
I got the opportunity to walk through there, and it's amazing. Like that museum is one of the best museums I've ever been to.
Tight.
And highly recommend, must see if you're ever in. On the East Coast at all. Just make your way down there.
Oof.
I'm like, now I'm very aroused.
Yes. And no, they have a whole floor dedicated to, you know, music.
Yeah, African
African Americans in music. And they have a little section on J Dilla, Ninth Wonder, sampling, hip hop, the genesis of hip hop. It's great. Yeah, y'all should check it out. But Ninth Wonder's documentary goes through the class that he teaches, how hip hop came to be, back in the '70s, back in the Bronx, really reminiscent of that show called The Get Down.
Yeah. The Get Down was dope.
I saw The Get Down and then I saw Ninth Wonder's documentary and I was like, these things are really similar.
Congruent.
Yeah. Very congruent. Exactly. Math word.
They align. They align. They align. Curriculum aligns.
The curriculum aligns. That's tight. Okay, so you got J. Dilla, you got Ninth Wonder. Who else?
Yeah, and then
three more.
Or whatever.
Three more?
No, whatever.
I would say next would be either Pete Rock or DJ Premier. Primo.
Okay. That's pretty solid. Do you know that those two people, Pete Rock and Premier, are producing De La Soul's next album?
No, is that right? No way. Right. I didn't know that.
That is right. It's on the Instagrams.
Yeah, I'm on the Instagrams, but do they have a name for the album yet?
No.
Okay,
no. It's just like these are the two people who have been charged with producing it.
Uh-huh.
So be on the lookout for that.
So my favorite of all time is Pete Rock. Mm-hmm. I love his beats.
Yeah,
but for sure. But if anybody were to argue with me and say Primo, I'd be like, no, you're good.
I agree with you.
No,
but see, here's the difference. I don't know. Pete Rock, Pete Tremendous was okay. It just feels different. Like I really get the sense that, because I didn't hear Madlib in there. Madlib is just a fucking
film. So here's my thing though. Here's my pushback. My pushback is this.
Gently push
is that in the 90s everybody wanted a Pete Rock remix. If you hear Pete Rock remixes to like popular songs, they're funky.
Yeah.
And they're really bassy. Yeah. And they're better. That's why he's my number one. But I get the Ninth Wonder. He's dope. Yeah.
He's one of my favorites.
And I saw the thing that he's like, he was taking classes at Harvard or teaching classes. What was it you said?
I'm not sure if he was teaching or taking. Probably more like taking a class under doing research or doing
with Gates.
Doing research with Dr. Gates. Dr. Yeah, Gates, exactly. Yeah.
So so you said you heard the episode that we did with Dr. Emden.
Yeah.
What was your thoughts on that? Shout out to Dr. Emden, Hip Hop Ed. At Chris Emden.
That was a great episode. I think I heard his name for the first time when I listened to a podcast with that he did with Neil deGrasse Tyson and the GZA. This was back in a few years ago. And they talked about hip hop and science. And that was like some of my two favorite things in one place. So I was like, that's amazing. So that's when I first heard about Dr. Emden. And then when he came on your podcast, I was like, you were able to get him to come to record with you guys. That's awesome. Like, I'm sure he gets like so many requests to come talk. He's pretty prolific. He's a great speaker. And it was awesome to hear you guys, just shoot the shit with him.
It was awesome. I'm not going to sugarcoat that.
Especially the freestyle at the end when you just dropped the beat for him and then he went off. Like,
I think if you haven't heard the episode, roll it back.
Yeah, roll it back.
Get back on your iTunes.
Listen.
Just listen to it because it's a good. I thought it was a good episode, but I'm super pumped up that you thought it was dope because you would be someone that we would want to like reach out to have more of these conversations because we need the industry folks who are like you who are just not only passionate about the work but passionate about the people we work with.
Yeah. Yeah. And it sounded like you had a productive conversation with him about, education.
Nah, we were fucking around
and
about
engagement
that
and all that stuff. But I mean,
it was good. We had a good time. It was
real good.
It was fun. Anything else we got, Caesar, before we wrap this wonderful podcast up? I don't know if we need a round two or if there's anything like you want to share with people that we didn't touch base on or any ask for the listeners.
Yeah, I have a couple takeaways if you want to end with that.
I love it.
Okay.
I asked him for the takeaways.
My first one is a little political. I don't know how political you guys get on here.
Very political.
Okay. All right. So, I'm a big advocate of science-based policy.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's kind of what I want to leave people with here. Go out and vote for people. Go to the polls. Vote for people that believe in, scientific evidence that informs, political or policy decisions. Mm. Like, for example, vote for people that, believe in climate change so that they'll institute policies that, will leave the world a better place for our kids and the future generations. We need officials that believe in funding research for gun violence so we can actually, dispel some of the myths that are out there.
Tell me more.
We need to
arouse.
We need to get more research into the effects of cannabis, both positive and negative.
You're reaching into our souls right now.
Hey, you're speaking to me, Daniel.
So there's also, a lot of, widely held myths about cannabis. We need research. We need to fund research, answer these questions, what else is there? This needs to be you know, discussed in terms of science policy. And so, yeah, I'm a huge advocate of science-based policy. You need that scientific evidence.
So here's what I'm going to
put. And just for full disclosure, I don't think he's really a person that's ever been like a cannabis guy. He's never talked to me about it. He's not. He's full science. You know what I mean? Like, he's not just like, I like weed.
You're a better man than us.
So more takeaways? You got one more?
I think we're going to delete that whole section out.
No, not at all.
Yeah. I mean, I just wanted people out there to, you know, take the time to appreciate how science has affected their lives. You know, we wouldn't have medicines. We wouldn't have cars. We wouldn't have phones. You know, science is important in our lives, and we should all really take the time to appreciate it. You know, go out there, hug your local scientist, you know, appreciate them. And also one more thing is, you know, scientists are normal people. You know, we're not all, you know, socially awkward nerds. I mean, I might have been a little awkward on this podcast, but that's my first time.
I mean, we're not dispelling that today.
We're not all crazy. We're not crazy, mad geniuses. We're not Dr. Octopus and stuff like that. You know, we're normal people with not so normal jobs. So, and there's a lot of us out there. So, you know, go out there and engage with scientists and yeah.
So true story though, I told Tavi that I was interviewing you today, my youngest son, mm-hmm. and he said, he's like Professor X. He's a scientist.
Sick.
I was like, yo.
That's a lit.
Professor X, yeah.
You're like an X-Man to my youngest son, bro. Legit.
And you don't know, that might have just fucking inspired him to be the next doctor.
Yep.
True that.
And with that,
I think we should end on one of the top five.
I'm gonna pull it up because your man's is just
whose.
It was good. Thank you so much for coming in and just doing your thing, man. That was cool.
Congratulations on your doctorate.
Thank you.
You know what I'm saying?
Appreciate it.
Used to drink brew and eat steak. Now we pop bottles with models, larger steaks on larger steaks. You know what I'm saying?
Thanks for having me.
We out.
I love you, bro.
I should have had an example for correlation causation. I thought about that, but I didn't. Oh, man.
Well, you didn't collaborate on the note that I sent you.
Well, another question.
That came out of, you know, our discussion.
Came out of nowhere, though. In that, my bad.
It's not bad. It's just I wasn't.
Well, there, I mean,
there's so many.
That's a real thing, though.
There's so many good examples out there. Yeah. A lot of it is based on that. Yeah, a lot of it is based on that.
That shitty science doesn't help anybody out.
Yeah, but...